show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got some Royals baseball to talk about. We most definitely do. And we will get to that in 1 second. But first, introductions. I am Jeff Herr. And type in hashtag ME1 on your phones and send it to the Kansas City Baseball or Kansas City Baseball Vault to vote for Michael Engel as the All-Star Podcaster of the Week. Mike, how are you doing on this very pleasant evening?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. A lot of stuff happened in the last week.
Yes, a lot of stuff certainly did happen, and we can jump right into that stuff that happened. Mainly, the Royals, you know, it seemed like they had would they lose two in a row, and then they lost the series to the White Sox, was it?
It was that Blue Jays series.
Blue Jays, I think, is what it was. Yes. And then they lost. I think they lost the first one to the White Sox.
Or right? No, it was the Tigers series was what they lost.
Tigers, that's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right. They just got got beat pretty tough in that last Toronto series. Yeah, they lost to Toronto and then lost to Detroit two games in a row.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid.
So, I mean, at one point it looked like, okay, maybe they were coming back down to earth, lost a few games, and boom, you know, right back on the horse. And last week, what did we talk about? We said possibly the most important series of the season this past weekend, over the holiday weekend, playing the Minnesota Twins in Kauffman on a four-game series that included a doubleheader this past Saturday. The Royals had to take care of business if they wanted to make a run at this thing. They really needed to put the stamp on the season and say, we're here, we're making this happen, we're going for it. And that is precisely what they did. We, you know, obviously sweeping a four-game series would be amazing, but especially when you have a doubleheader in there, it's very difficult to do such a thing, and the Royals weren't able to come out ahead on that, but they did win three out of four games against the Twins, shifting those two in positions. They actually overtook the Twins for a game, and then since then they have been tied with them now, essentially, for second place in the division. And tied for the second wild card spot, also with the Tampa Bay Rays, though the Tampa Bay Rays did lose today, but going into today, they were all three tied. So we had a three-way tie for second place. We talked about it, I think it was last year, Mike and I were discussing this on the show, but before the show, I think it was last year we were talking about some fantastically weird scenario where you have three teams all tied at the end of the season for the second wild card spot. You'd have to play like a round robin weird scenario just to see who gets to play the one game to see who gets to actually go into the quote unquote real playoffs. So I would hope the Royals would not be involved in such a thing, but if it did happen, that's some absolute craziness. But speaking of craziness, I mean, just the idea that, okay, you know, a month ago, the Royals were eight games under 500 or so. My date, times, and everything aren't going to be exact, but you know, they were quite a few games over or under 500, and they were, you know, at their worst, they were 10 games under. And now here we are. The Royals are 43-40, second place in the division. They're a game and a half behind the Indians, only one game behind in the win column, and two behind in the loss, making them 1.5 total. And then the Yankees actually have the exact same record as Cleveland, making them a game and a half out of the first wild card spot. So here you have the Royals who, I mean, you know, a few shows ago were dead in the water. We were talking about, you know, possibly selling. We were talking about, you know, we're going to just pack it in, start the rebuild? Would Mike Moustakas even finish the season if he is able to break Steve Baboni's record? More on that in a second. But would he even be in a Royals uniform at the end of the year? Because he might be sold off. But here we are. And again, the Royals, 3 games above .500 now. They've won 7 out of their last 8 series, I believe. They're 17-6 in their last 23 games. They are, they just took 3 out of 4 from the Twins. They've already won the series against Seattle with the final game coming in tonight, which is, again, important because, as we talked about last show, Seattle was also a team. They're a few games back now, partly because of what the Royals have done to them. But the Mariners are very much in the hunt for that wild card spot as well. So the Royals are putting more distance between themselves and another team that could possibly be gunning for that same spot. So, you know, hopefully if the Royals can complete the sweep tonight, put themselves at 44-40, they need as much breathing room as they can, because after this Mariners series, of course, they will go and play the Dodgers, who are pretty well the consensus best team in baseball.
Yeah.
Including the final game before the All-Star break this coming Sunday, where actually quite a good face-off for not just, you know, Royals or Dodgers fans, but for all of baseball, as Clayton Kershaw will be pitching and facing off against Danny Duffy, who is back now. And again, we'll get more on that in a second, but we'll just kind of talk about the team overall before we drop into some specifics. So, I mean, this is pretty crazy, isn't it? I mean, I was asking you to, I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, where I was asking you to kind of talk me down for my high, because they were still under 500, but now here we are, and they're over 500, and they're, you know, game and a half back of first, and the first wild card, and they're in the second wild card, and, you know, if you're the rest of the American League, you're definitely, if you're, you know, Cleveland and Minnesota, but if you're the rest of the American League, too, you got to be a little bit concerned about the Royals, am I right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that we, is, you know, so much of our analysis of this season has been based off of, well, look, this is a lot of the same players who were around, you know, 2013 when the Royals were a winning team, in 2014 where they won the pennant, 2015 where they won the whole dang thing. You know, last year they didn't have a good year. There were a lot of injuries. There's a lot of regression. A lot of players didn't really, you know, reach those expectations that we had for them. This year, that was April. April looked awful. And at the end of April, you know, you started to think about, okay, what are the, you know, what can the Royals get for some of these guys in trades when they inevitably sell guys off, you know? But, you know, since they've gotten out of April, they played better in May. They started to finally score some runs and kind of put some things together. They got some more consistency from the lineup. And then in June, ever since they went on that trip to the West Coast, you know, they went through San Diego and L.A. and San Francisco. That really got them going, and you know, since then they've definitely played a lot better on both sides. You know, the pitching's been more consistent, with some hiccups. I mean, they've had, you know, that Minnesota series in particular was kind of walking a wire, because they, you know, out of nowhere they called up Luke Farrell to make a start. They had Travis Wood slated to make a start, and then when you're talking doubleheader, you're talking about, you know, you've got to somehow cover those innings. And so they managed to do it and get through it and win 3 out of 4 against Minnesota. And that's kind of the kind of peak of it, because, you know, not only did they come through in a series where it was going to be difficult based on the pitching matchups, and the fact that the Royals were just, you know, not really bringing a lot of great pitching in that particular series, but they got through that doubleheader, making a big comeback in that first game. And it really had that kind of feeling of the 2015 team, where it's like, okay, we're down, whatever. And you just chip away, you chip away. And then once they got the lead, they really kind of, you know, put it on and ran away in that game. And they ended up, you know, winning that Sunday game. The momentum's carried through into the Seattle series. In fact, in the last 3 games, this was tweeted out by, I don't remember who tweeted it. They're in the Royals, kind of PR department, I believe, that it's a 3-game stretch where the Royals didn't allow an extra base hit. It's like, Okay. Wow. That I didn't realize that watching these games, but yeah, that's true. And you know, the result is they've given up 6 runs over the last 3 games. That's pretty good. Including now the return of Danny Duffy, who pitched 5.2 innings last night, threw about 86 pitches, looked a little rough in the first inning, left one pitch up to Nelson Cruz that, you know, he hit it to the wall, but he's very slow. So he only got a single out of it. But if it was, you know, if he was a little bit quicker on it to turn on it, might have hit it out. It was just a poorly located pitch, but Duffy got it back together over the last, you know, 4.2 innings of his outing and looked every bit the part of the guy that, you know, we expect to see. So for something like that, where not only did the Royals play well in June while Duffy was out, but he made it back, you know, not just like, oh, he's throwing again. No, he's back here starting like 2-3 weeks ahead of schedule. And for a team like the Royals, that's got to be a pretty big boost, and especially when you've got the opportunity to put him into a spot where now you don't have to worry about, you know, Jake Junis, Eric Skoglund, Luke Farrell, Travis Wood, who actually pitched pretty well in his game too. You don't have to worry about those guys at least through the rest of the first half. You know, they're going to be able to skip that fifth starter. But even going forward, once they're out of the All-Star break, you got Duffy. You know, he doesn't seem any worse for wear. It seems like he's perfectly comfortable, wasn't hindered at all. It's really just a matter of he hasn't pitched in a month, so his pitch count isn't up. But he threw 86, should be able to go about 100 next time, and should be all systems go from there. So you know, that puts them in a good spot. So they're going to be able to have Kennedy, who's pitching better, Vargas, who's been excellent, and Duffy. And you get those three guys and anything out of Jason Hamill and whoever is going to fill the fifth spot, be it Travis Wood or whomever else, they're in a pretty good spot. You know, the lineup is hitting better. You know, they finally kind of broke out of that habit of, okay, they're 6 games under, or they're 7 games under, or they're 8, now they're 7, now they're 6. You know, they were in that spot, in that range for like a whole month, and then they finally kind of got some momentum, turned it on. And so, yeah, if you're another team in the league, you know, this is a team that's been there before. And for whatever that counts, you know, I think any team out there who's trying to contend has to have that in the back of their mind, that you've got guys in Lorenzo Cain and Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and others who have been down this path. They've been in the playoffs before. You know, the Twins haven't been in a playoff race, really. The Mariners haven't been in a heated one that recently. The Rays really haven't in a while. So, you know, it's something where the Royals have been there before, and I think they might be at a point for whatever the intangibles matter where they're just like, to heck with it. Let's go do something. And you know, you talked about trying to talk you down. No. I mean, Ned Yost said today we're going for it. You know, they're going to go for it. And, you know, they're playing well. They're playing with confidence. And, yeah, that's probably not a team you want to face right now if you're anybody else in the American League.
Yeah, I mean, it's out there. Ned Yost said it. He said, if anything, expect to be buyers. They're the Royals. Expect the Royals to be buyers and not sellers at the deadline. I mean, which would be crazy. I don't necessarily know what the Royals really have to in terms of resources to be buying right now. But just that, just the fact that's out there. And I think with where we're at now, the Royals are all but guaranteed to keep the majority of the players. So, you know, if Mike Moustakas were to break Balboni's home run record and exercise the Balboni homer demon, I am 90% confident that he will be with the Royals if and when he does it. And, you know, it's really quite interesting. One of the things that you mentioned that we've kind of talked about, I remember talking about it last year, and I think even a little bit the beginning of this year as we were heading into the season, kind of wondering how the season would unfold and maybe with some of the struggles early on. But last year, so in 2015, and you talked about how games recently have felt like that 2015 team, and specifically I think about last night as an example. You mentioned Duffy struggled in the first inning. You know, the Royals in the top of the first, they're in Seattle, so they were, you know, as the away team at the top of the first, go up 1-0. Bottom of the inning, Duffy gives up 2 runs. And, you know, in 2016, I never quite had the feeling when I would get the, you know, if I wasn't watching the game and I'd get the update on my phone or something and I'd see how the other team scored, goes up to, you know, 1, 2, 3 runs in the first couple innings, it was just kind of like, oh, well, you know, see you tomorrow, I guess. That was kind of the feeling that it was. Just
yeah,
didn't seem
this
like
gonna they
had
to be a struggle
that.
Tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Every game was a struggle, even the ones that they won. Whereas 2015, it was like they go down 2 runs in the first inning. It's like a ton of game left, not even concerned, not even worried. And, you know, the majority of the time they ended up winning, whether they fell behind or not. So early in the season, it didn't feel that way because the offense was tepid at best. But the you know, recently, the last month or so, it's felt very much like that 2015 team. I don't know if I'd say exactly like it, but as close as it's been since then, you know, definitely mm-hmm. closer than they were at any point last year. So last night, they go up 1-0, everything's great. They go down 2-1, and I found myself being like, oh, well, first inning, a lot of game left, you know, and I was a little bit concerned with, you know, Danny Duffy giving up 2 runs in his first inning back. But as you mentioned, he really settled in after that. And, you know, granted, his pitch count's not up. He made it through 5 2/3 innings. But, you know, he'll get there. And, you know, he really was just kind of cranking it out after that and had a really solid game on his first one back at the major league level, giving you, you know, some definite hope that he's, you know, going to just kind of pick up where he left off before he got injured. And, you know, we kind of talked about it before, even though it's, you know, we're still a few weeks away from the trade deadline. But, you know, this is essentially an addition here. All the moves the Rose have been making have been sans Duffy. So introduce him back into the equation. Yeah. And now you look even scarier, you know, and we've kind of talked about, but probably not nearly enough, you know, what Jason Vargas has done this season, and he continues to keep rolling. And then when throwing Duffy on top of that mix, and if he comes back and just, you know, picks up right where he left, and, you know, Ian Kennedy has kind of settled in. He's not having the most spectacular season, but it's, you know, he's keeping him in games and doing kind of more or less what he needs to do. And, you know, so the rotation is, you know, there's still the Nate Karn spot, which, when he'll be back, if he'll be back this season, and, you know, who's going to fill that role until he gets back, you know, if he comes back. It's just, so that's kind of the last piece of it there. But as of now, you know, the rotation's looking pretty solid, and most spectacularly, the offense has just woken up and they've sustained what they have. And, you know, you look at the way things are going, and you, whenever a team goes on a tear like this, you look and you say, okay, what's sustainable and what's not sustainable? Well, typically you would say, well, you know, the Royals, you know, quote unquote, offensive outbursts that they've had the last month or so would not be sustainable. But then you really look and you say, you know, what about this isn't sustainable? So, you know, starting at the top, you know, Whit Merrifield at his slash line is .288, .323, .464. He's probably playing a little bit above his head there, but that's, you know, pretty consistent actually with what he did last year. If you kind of when after he kind of had his dip and then he readjusted when he came back up to the majors. So, you know, this more or less could be kind of who he is. And then you look at, you know, Eric Hosmer at .313, .371, .484. I mean, that's kind of who he is. That's the player we thought. Or I shouldn't say who he is, but that's the player we thought he would be, and he's had seasons like this before. So him being able to sustain this for an entire season, he'll have some dips as he's you know, want to have, but he's proven that he can sustain this level for an entire season.
He's basically gone like 2 months being one of the best hitters in baseball right now.
Absolutely.
After an awful April, but I mean since
yeah.
He's been great. So
absolutely. And, you know, Lorenzo Cain, .278, .349, .437. You know, that's a solid line. He's not setting the world on fire, but that's what Lorenzo, honestly, the last 3-4 years, that's what we've come to expect from Lorenzo Cain. You know, his batting average is a little bit lower, but he's kind of made up for it with a higher on base percentage. So I feel like that's really sustainable for him. You know, you go down the line, you know, so it's Sal Perez at .290, .320, .523.
Right. He's in .290. That's what you got to look at. It's like crazy. That's,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, the batting solid. Average is probably a little bit higher than we would expect, but his on base and slugging percentage are pretty close to his, you know, his norms. So he'll probably dip a little bit, but you can imagine that would sustain. But then you look too at, you know, Alex Gordon is still hitting 195 and his on base is still sub 300. And Alcides Escobar is still hitting 225 and on base of 242, you know, so those guys still have room to increase. So even though you might have some dip, you know, I mean, you look at Jorge Bonifacio, we've talked about him. He's had 11 home runs. He's really kind of stepped up and filled a void that needed to be filled, and he's hitting 247. You know, so Brandon Moss is still hitting 194. You know, so these, I mean, it's not as – my point here is that it's not as though they're just out of their minds right now and, you know, everyone is just – blasting off, getting incredibly lucky, you know, just hitting like crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. Escobar has upped his game a little bit to raise his average to where it is now, but you know, it's still nothing that we haven't seen from Escobar before that he's been able to, that we'd be confident he could sustain these things, you know. And Moose obviously has kind of become the exact player essentially that we thought he was, or that he thought we would be, that we thought he would be coming up. And you know, all these things, it's nothing that seems unsustainable. Whether or not it actually does sustain or not, who knows. But then same with the pitching staff. When you go and you look at everything, you know, there's no, you know, there's definitely been some good performances, and you got, you know, guys like Jason Hamill and Travis Wood and all that who've kind of pitched a little bit better than we would think the last month or so, kind of similar to how Dylan G caught a little bit of lightning last year in a bottle and had a strong, a few good starts.
That
together.
One good month.
Yeah. Hopefully it lasts a little bit longer than that. But, you know, for the most part, you know, your main pieces, your Vargas, Kennedy, Vargas is having an exceptional season. So he's a little bit, but he's sustained it for the whole season. You got Duffy and Kennedy. And, then when you factor in the bullpen, you know, Soria, Herrera, those people, I mean, they're all kind of doing what they're supposed to be doing. Again, Vargas the exception, going the other way in the really good direction. So, you know, they're just back to playing that 2015. I shouldn't even say it like that. It feels kind of more that way, but they're really not. It's kind of a different makeup now with more power, but just the. It still feels as relentless, you know, because at any point in time, anyone can step up and make something happen, you know, and you know, we talked about the holes in the order, and Alex Gordon still doing, you know, very poorly, and Alcides Escobar is still not doing very well, and Brandon Moss is still kind of but they've had their moments all the same. You know, Brandon Moss has had some big hits and some big home runs. He's got 10 home runs, even though he's hitting sub 200. Mm-hmm. You know, Alex Gordon has had some big moments and some home runs lately. And Escobar's had some big hits and some big plays when he's needed to make them. So it kind of feels like that just next man up, whenever they need a play, somebody's out there to make it happen. That's what it kind of feels like in terms of the 2015 Royals. And it's not as contact heavy as it was back then in terms of the offensive approach and things like that, but you know, it's definitely, it has that feeling to me of somebody's there to step up when they need them. And speaking of stepping up, I think we'll dive into this right now. It's the Balboni update.
We still don't have a fanfare for that or anything.
Still don't. No, we don't.
We just won't. Well, I mean,
I don't know where that's from. That's something.
It sounds like ABC News or something.
Yeah, ABC. That sounds right.
I don't know.
There it is. Something like that. But anyway, Mike Moustakas, a bit of a tear this past week. Yet again, this is a commonplace occurrence. He's reached a career high.
Home runs. It's folks. July 5th.
24 home runs, July 5th. 75 games he's played so far this season. And he's reached a career high, 24 home runs. By two, his career high was 22 home runs that he set in 2015. And he's eclipsed that by two already. And we're just barely past the halfway point in the season. For context, at this point in the 1985 season, Steve Balboni, after 83 games, had 14 home runs. Mike Moustakas is 10 home runs ahead of the pace of Steve Balboni. So, I mean, at this point, it feels almost like a foregone conclusion. Now, there have been plenty of players who have had a really strong first half of the season in terms of home runs and then strongly tapered off towards the second half of the season. So it's very, very, very possible that Mike Moustakas could still just tank and not break the record. So that's out there. That's a possibility in the realm of things that could happen. But it feels pretty confident right now, so much so, not only do we feel confident about it, but baseball feels confident about it because they elected Mike Moustakas to be in the Home Run Derby. When was the last row to be in the Home Run Derby?
It was Danny Tartable.
Was that the last one?
Was
that like 1990-ish?
Yeah, it was like 91, I think.
Man. So, I mean,
they didn't even televise it as far as I knew.
Yeah, I mean,
it certainly wasn't the thing that it is now. It's I don't even know if there's footage.
The Royals hosted the damn game in 2012, and they they had someone who was in the top 10 in home runs for the American League in Billy Butler, and they still didn't get a participant. But now here we are, Mike Moustakas with 24 home runs, up there in the tops of the American League. I'm not sure exactly where he ranks off the top of my head.
He should be top five. They do a seeding for it, and I think he's like the fifth seed, the top eight guys. So he's definitely like Judge is first. Stanton's up there.
Judge has 29,
which is silly,
which is absurd. Springer has 25, and Moose is tied for third with Logan Morrison at 24. Okay. This is going into today. I say because going into the day, Judge had 28, but I believe he hit one earlier today when they played. So he has 29 now, and tied, I think, Lou Gehrig for the Yankee record in home runs already.
Heard of that guy.
Yeah, he's somebody famous, isn't he? So Mike Moustakas is third in the rankings there, with 24 home runs, tied with Logan Morrison, Kansas City native Logan Morrison.
But yeah,
so that's pretty cool, pretty impressive. And to add on to that, Mike Moustakas has made the final five, whatever the hell they call it. The
final vote, whatever.
Yeah, the final fan vote to get somebody else in. Last I heard, he had a somewhat relatively comfortable lead in terms of getting the final nod to be in the All-Star game. So he could himself make his second All-Star game appearance in addition to being in the Home Run Derby. But outside of that, the Royals have two additional All-Stars. Sal Perez, who's starting yet again in the All-Star game.
Yep,
fourth straight. And Jason Vargas, folks, making his first ever All-Star game appearance at 34 in his first season post-Tommy John surgery. And the dude is just having a fantastic year. We were going through this before the show, but it's a legitimate question. It's not just a conversation. It's not just in the conversation to start the All-Star game. If you can actually make yourself sound out those words, Jason Vargas starting the All-Star game, but it's a legitimate conversation to have. He is right now, he's leads the American League in WAR by a half run over Chris Sale. He leads the American League in earned run average by almost 0.4 runs over Chris Sale. He has the most wins in the American League over Chris Sale. Then he's in the top 10 in most of the other major categories, WHIP, win-loss percentage, etc. So when you look at all these things, Mike, once you can get over the shock of Jason Vargas All-Star game star, do you think that's actually what should happen? You think that he is the guy that would he get your vote for starting the All-Star game?
I think there's an argument for it. I think you laid out a lot of the points right there in that, you know, he has, you know, the best ERA. He's got all those wins. He has pitched very well. I think for the purpose of the All-Star game, they're more likely to probably go with Chris Sale simply because he's Chris Sale. He's more recognizable name. And in a sense, this is still kind of a a marketing game that's, you know, it's an exhibition. It's about the fans. That's how you can get, you know, so your people are out there voting for Moustakas right now as we record this because the fans in Kansas City want to see him in the All-Star game. So, in the end, it doesn't really matter because, again, it's an exhibition. I would expect Chris Sale to get it, but Vargas is right up there. I mean, he's definitely got a case to be made for that, and how that would be so crazy. Like, even in 2009, Roy Halladay started that game when Zach Greinke went on to win the Cy Young Award. The last and only Royal to start an All-Star game as a pitcher was Brett Saberhagen in 1987. So, I mean, wow. That's just how it's been. You know, the Kevin Apiers of the world, the Mark Gubazas, the David Cones, you know, they didn't start All-Star games. And really, not super close to it. So, yeah, I think that would be kind of crazy. That would be one of those weird historical footnotes you would find where it's like, Jason Vargas started an All-Star game. What? Jason Vargas? Yeah. What? It could happen. It's entirely possible that he could end up starting that All-Star game. And, you know, if he does, that'd be awesome. It'd be you'd have a Royals pitcher starting the All-Star game, and you would have a Royal in the Home Run Derby.
Wow.
What is that? That's crazy. Like, they won the World Series in 2015. They didn't get either of those. It's just like, that's crazy. I think it'd be really fun, though, you know, just to see Vargas.
Absolutely.
You know, you'd have, you know, the like 90% of baseball fans out there would be thinking, like, Jason Vargas? What?
He of the career 4.03 ERA.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the future holds for him, but. Yeah, he's having a great season this year, and if he's rewarded by starting in the All-Star game, that would be pretty cool. I would still lean Chris Sale, though, just, you know, for the sake of the name, you know, it is more likely to get your viewership at the first part if it's Sale against Scherzer, but, you know, what? Maybe that's cynical of me, but, you know, that's probably how I think they'll lean, and that's how I would lean if I were to make that particular call.
Yeah, you know, if I'm reasonable, I probably would do the same, you know, just because all the reasons you mentioned. But I'm not reasonable, and I'm a fan, so I think Jason Vargas. Plus, like, you know,
what reason do we have to be reasonable about this season anyway?
Exactly,
right, the way it's gone, it's right? Like, screw it, burn the boats, and, go for it.
You know, as you know, but maybe not necessarily all of our listeners, I'm somewhat of like a movie buff, I guess you could say. You know, I like movies a lot. I follow the industry, go to a lot of movies, awards and such. Well, you know, so often in movie history, it seems like the Academy Awards have been given for, you know, somebody who's quote unquote earned it. And, you know, sometimes maybe a better performance is passed over in favor of, or with the idea that, okay, someone may be a younger person, and so they'll have multiple opportunities, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the best examples would be Al Pacino, okay? I mean,
hoo-ah!
Yeah, exactly. He was nominated for, you know, Godfather Part 1, Godfather Part 2,
Serpico,
like all these movies that were just fantastic performances that he was nominated for, never won. And then there was a long stretch where he wasn't nominated for anything. And then they finally did The Scent of a Woman, which was just not nearly as good as some of the other, but they were finally like, okay, well, we got to give it to this guy,
yeah.
You know, but,
or it's like Scorsese then, winning for, what's it called? The Boston one. Yes, The Departed.
Yeah, yeah. Which I love The Departed, but I don't.
Yeah,
know.
I liked it too. But
he's definitely probably had, you know, better movies on his own. But there's, you know, so lots of scenarios like that. And that's why you have someone like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, who just won recently, but it seemed like he was always the guy that didn't win because there was always like, you know, somebody else to give it to or something. But, you know, so, and this is not a hard and fast rule, but it's kind of what it reminded me of. When I think, well, you know, could you say to yourself, you know what, Chris Sale is a pretty young guy. He's had a ton of success, made some All-Star games. He's going to have another chance to start this thing. Jason Vargas is 34, never made an All-Star game. Who knows if he'll ever have a season like this again? Let's give him the start. You know, he's paid his dues. Let's give it to him. Let's let Jason Vargas have this moment. Chris Sale will have plenty in his career, so let Jason Vargas have this one. That's, if it's me, that's what I'm saying. So I don't know if that's what people will do or people will say, but you know what? That's my reasoning for why Jason Vargas should be starting the All-Star game and throwing to Salvador Perez. I mean, how many times have we had this happen in the last few years? You know, Royals pitcher throwing to Salvador Perez. I mean, pretty cool to see all that going down. And, you know, I say only, but this is the Royals we're used to now. Only two All-Stars for the Royals, possibly right. Three if Mike Moustakas wins, which, it, you know, there's a pretty good chance the way us rabid Royals fans vote on these sort of voting things.
People have been making plans all day for what they're going to do tomorrow when the hashtags are counting. Yeah.
Yeah, posting all the screenshots, etc.
Yeah.
Even Danny Duffy got in on the game, posting some vote moose hashtags and such.
Ned Yost said he was even voting, so
there you go.
You know, if you got Ned Yost voting, that's something.
Yes, it is.
And if you're listening right now, this should post probably about 10 in the morning on Thursday. So if that's the case, you've got till 3 p.m. Central Time to vote on Twitter with the vote
make it happen
hashtag. Just add it to every tweet. You know, you quote tweet something. Do that. Retweets count. You know, retweet us. Retweet BP Kansas City.
Retweet this podcast with a vote with a hashtag vote moose.
Absolutely. In fact, what I think what we should do is when we post this episode, we'll throw a vote moose hashtag on there. And if it gets over like 50 retweets, we'll probably give out a gift certificate or something to Kelly's.
Boom. There it
is. Let's just do that. So if you're listening right now, by 3 p.m. on Thursday, if the whatever link or whatever tweet you basically just go to KC Baseball Vault on Twitter and retweet, you know, whatever link this has, you know, whatever tweet we put this link into, retweet it if it has vote moose, or if you want to quote tweet it, you know, you can put vote moose, but yeah, you should do that. And if it gets up to 50, we'll just do a giveaway of everybody who retweeted it, I guess. I'll make a note to give much more clear instructions tomorrow when this goes.
Yes, as but a little, definitely.
A little haphazard impromptu giveaway there.
Yes, but definitely vote moose on that one.
If nothing else, you get to piss off Boston because Xander Bogaerts is in second and to heck with them.
Yeah, we could piss off Boston twice if Moose wins over Bogaerts, and then Vargas gets to start over Chris Sale. How much would that be?
Oh, let's do it. That'd be great.
Yes, that'll just be the first in a series of pissing off Boston that possibly, hopefully, culminates with beating them in the playoffs. That's down the road.
I'm in. Let's do it.
But
start now.
I love when teams start to irrationally hate the Royals, like the Blue Jays, and especially the Orioles. The Orioles are the worst offender, it feels like. They just seemingly will not let it go.
I think the Blue Jays were able to shift over to Texas, and more of their rage goes towards Texas. But Baltimore, it's still stuck in their craw.
Because that was supposed to be their year, because they were in the ALCS, right, the year before? Or was it did they just make the ALDS year before?
I don't remember. 2013.
I know they were in the playoffs.
I don't recall, but I mean, they'd been good for a couple of years leading up to that, and it was just like, yeah, okay, finally we're going to break through, and then nope.
Especially once they found out they were playing the Royals, you know, certainly that fan base was like, oh, it's the Royals? Hell yeah.
Right.
World Series, you know.
Oh, man. And then four games later,
no. So I love that. I love it personally when that type of thing happens, and I would love for nothing more than all season for Boston to just be like, man, the Royals again? Damn it. I would love that. So that kind of hits up the All-Star thing. The other big news this week, we kind of talked about it. We've pretty much hit on all the high points, but Danny Duffy coming back. I mean, we've kind of talked about it, but how do you feel about this? You know, I think there was some possible consternation, myself included, thinking that maybe it was a tad too soon. Maybe you wanted to play it extra safe on this, but here he's back, and not only did he start yesterday and do pretty well, but he's going to start on Sunday and maybe the best pitching matchup of the year for the Royals going against Clayton Kershaw. I mean, how did you feel about Duffy's first opener, and how do you feel about, you know, him coming back? So I guess I don't know the exact amount of weeks he was out, but it seems like relatively soon.
Yeah, it was May 28th when he went down, and he was back to doing rehab starts. I mean, he's made two rehab starts already, so it was pretty quick, especially when the initial prognosis was 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, it felt like it was done. Like, okay, great, the Royals did all this clawing back to stay relevant, and then their best pitcher, well, you know, their best pitcher on paper, goes down, and it's like, okay, well, what's left? So, yeah, I'm really happy to see him back, and not only that, but, like, you know, it's that first inning, he gave up two hits that weren't hit that hard, but they did make it through, and then he gave up a hard hit ball to Cruz that wasn't located very well, and he threw, you know, 20 pitches, I think, in that first inning, and it kind of felt like, ah, oh, crud, he's going to throw like 80 pitches over four innings and not be sharp and going to be tough, and, you know, you're not going to feel 100% confident going into the next start. And then he just kind of got it together. Like, nobody really hit him that hard the rest of the night. There wasn't really – I mean, he walked a couple guys. There were a couple counts that got worked up. But, yeah, I mean, he took the opportunity when he went down to those rehab starts and started to try to play around with the curveball a little bit. And he threw a couple of them in his start last night. So that might be something that – you know, he finally gets an opportunity in a no-pressure situation to work on something different and maybe add something. You know, when he came up, you'll remember that he was, you know, fastball guy. He had the changeup. But his curveball was, like, the breaking pitch. That was his main secondary pitch. And a lot of times, especially in that first season, he never really got the right feel for it. And there were so many games where you could tell he didn't have the curveball and he just went fastball changeup basically, and it was nothing more than a show pitch. A couple years later, he ends up, you know, after he's coming back from Tommy John surgery, he develops a slider, starts to kind of amp up the velocity and ends up, you know, where that works out to be a pretty good pitch. The changeup is very good too. So if he can get a curveball going as well, give him, you know, four really strong pitches that he can work with, that might make him just even better. And, you know, I think he's going to be, you know, full steam ahead. Full steam? That's not the right expression. Full speed ahead.
Yes.
Full steam ahead. Duh.
I think both are acceptable.
I guess.
Because if you were talking about, like, a steamer boat, right? And you...
Give it
full steam, you know.
It's okay. I can take the L. It's fine. So yeah, I think. Are you checking to see?
I am.
Full steam, okay.
Full steam. It actually says first page on Google. Full steam (parentheses) or speed (parentheses)
okay.
Ahead.
Well, fine then.
Used to indicate that one should proceed with as much speed or energy as possible.
All right.
You are correct. I'm here for you.
Let's,
Mike, continue.
There we go. So, I mean, I think that's a good thing to see that he can maybe bring in this new pitch and maybe have just another look, you know, that gives him the opportunity to maybe have another out pitch or at least give them something else to think about. The other thing that I noticed was the first pitch of the game that he threw was 95 and his 86th and final pitch was 93. So it's not like he lost any velocity as the game went on. He pretty much sustained it, sustained the same level of control, and ended up, you know, having a pretty good game for his first start back. So I think that bodes very well. It's going to be interesting to see him against Kershaw just because Kershaw is really good. I mean, he was throwing a no-hitter through 6 1/3 last night and looked pretty strong. Threw a lot more pitches than he usually does, but he still struck out like 11 or 12 guys. And it's like, okay. I mean, he's the best pitcher in the game, so
Right.
The Royals have their work cut out for him, but he's not infallible. He's not perfect. And Duffy can, you know, if he has a good game, can basically match him, you know, pitch for pitch. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. It's, you know, it's nice to see Duffy, one, come back early and be able to get a couple starts in. It's just, you know, the Royals can leverage him being back and get the guy that they want in position. And you don't have to worry about Travis Wood filling the spot. You don't have to worry about, you know, bringing Jake Junis back up or Eric Skoglund or any of those guys. And nothing against any of those guys, but if you've got the opportunity to put a big leaguer in that rotation, you know, that's what you want. And those guys, so far, they haven't been consistent to where, you know, you want to kind of continue with that. So, oh, another thing, we didn't even talk about this. You can get your Duffy thoughts in here, but we do need to talk a little bit about Matt Strom, so we can cover that in a second. But yeah, what did you see from Duffy, or what do you think about Duffy, and are your fears of him returning too soon alleviated?
They seem to be pretty alleviated. You know, the reports from him down in the minor leagues in his rehab start seemed to be pretty good. You know, seemed like he was, you know, feeling fine, feeling okay, and you know, normally I wouldn't be too concerned. It depends on the injury so much of how concerned I am of whether or not somebody comes back too soon or not. And as we've talked about before, oblique sprain, they can get kind of touchy to where, you know, if you come back too soon and you re-aggravate the injury, it's one of those things that just never goes away for kind of the rest of the season. And next thing you know, it's August and they finally just say, you know, we just have to shut him down and it's a lost season, you know? So that's mm-hmm. the fear that you have, and or at least that I have. And, you know, it's slowly going away as the, you know, he seemed really comfortable after all his starts, all his rehab starts, and then, you know, going 5 2/3, would you say 86 pitches, I think it was, that, you know, I'm pretty, you know, those are pretty solid numbers. I think he's going to continue to, you know, he'll probably be, you know, I'm not sure what, how they'll increase his pitch number or pitch count for Sunday start. You know, hopefully he can come out and, you know, not have a rocky first inning and then just kind of pick up where he left off. And that'll be nice because he'll have those two starts under his belt, get a nice little all-star break to rest and recuperate, and then start back at it for the second half of the season, the quote-unquote second half, since we're – by games, we're already into the second half of the season. But, yeah, you know, my concerns of him coming back too early are – dwindling by the day. And I was really excited to see, because that's, I mean, when I first, you know, oh shoot, gives up two runs in the bottom of the first, oh mm-hmm. this could be bad, just like I had the same thoughts that you did. And but he settled in and things you know, he was able to make it work. So, you know, hopefully that means that he's completely over the injury and he's just going to pick up right where he left off before getting put on the DL. And just one more thing to kind of bolster the Royals as they're knee deep in this run right now of gunning for that first place in the division. And you know, Duffy being he's going to be a major part of it. If they end up making this happen and getting back into first place, or, you know, eventually possibly winning the division or getting a wild card spot, it's going to be because Danny Duffy has a good second half. So, you know, hopefully my fears were all for naught and he is able to come back just as strong as he was before. But you did mention Matt Strom. And we've had some news with him. He was it the 60-day DL he's placed on?
Yeah, they just bumped him right to it. He's, you know, he had made a couple starts. They had that good start against the Angels, looked good. He faced Boston, and they kind of worked him a little bit. And then he got Detroit, and, you know, he was a little better against Detroit, but they still kind of got to him. And, you know, it seemed like, okay, maybe he's not ready to do this yet. You know, maybe he's not quite there. And in that game where Luke Farrell started, that normally would have been Strom. So they were talking about, well, we're going to just put him back in the bullpen and, you know, best utilize him that way, which maybe that would have been the right way to go, just because he was having a lot of trouble the second and third time through a lineup. Well, I guess he was having some knee pain, and they thought it was tendonitis, and then he went out there and relieved Farrell, and I think it was, you know, I think he pitched an inning, but it was the second inning he was working. He ended up throwing a pitch and was just really wild. I think he'd walked two guys and went to 2-0, or he walked a guy and the bases loaded or something. I don't remember the sequence, but the trainer came out and he just left, just outright left the game, which doesn't happen often. That's not good ever when that happens. And it turns out that they think that there's a torn tendon in his knee. So they just bumped him right to the 60 man. And yeah, so that's probably going to shut him down for, I would guess, the whole season. I can't imagine he's going to get a second opinion. But how often does a second opinion differ enough to allow someone to pitch?
Didn't we have that discussion last year? And that was like the first time I'd ever, David Price, wasn't it?
Was it earlier this year?
Yeah, it was. Everyone thought Tommy John.
Yeah.
And then he got a second opinion, and they were like, oh, no.
You're fine. Okay. You can do it. He's pitching. He's pitching. Yeah, so.
Yeah, he's, you know, struggled a little bit.
Yeah, but if it's torn, it's torn. You know,
yeah,
so, I mean, it's like there's not much you can do, and normally that's about a six-month injury, give or take. I mean, Garrett Richards is one of the more notable guys to have that kind of injury. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. That's unfortunate. Strom had kind of an up and down, I wouldn't say lost season, but, you know, he is someone who came in, you thought this guy's going to be like lights out of the bullpen. He definitely was not in that first week. And then he came back and he was really good and earned the shot at the rotation. And that first start, it felt like, oh, okay, we got something going. If you can add Strom into that rotation and get Duffy back eventually, it felt like, okay, this is rounding things out. And then, you know, it just didn't work out. So it's pretty unfortunate, but, you know, he'll get healed up and he'll come back and he'll get another shot at it. But yeah, I really wouldn't expect to see him back this year unless some kind of miracle happens in that second opinion and it's something that he can actually rest and heal and doesn't require, you know, different type of repair. So kind of a bummer, but the Royals, thankfully, have kind of – Scott Alexander's been pitching well. Mike Minor's been pitching well. Neftali Feliz, since he's joined the Royals, has pitched well. You know, maybe not lights out, but he's gotten through some innings. So, you know, those guys on top of Soria and
Herrera. Five scoreless, right, as a Royal?
His first appearance, he gave up a run – but
so most recent five scoreless.
Yeah. So, I mean, you'll take that. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
Considering that he's basically a free acquisition. If he can be the guy we thought he would be before the season and anything close to what he was last year, that's pretty good. So it's like a free bullpen arm.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I heard Buster Olney on A10 today, and he was kind of mentioning that this is one of the things he loves the most about baseball. And the example he brought up was basketball, where you say somebody doesn't just wake up one day and develop a jump shot, you know, or something to that effect. But a pitcher in baseball can wake up one day and he had a story. God, I cannot remember who it was. But he had a story of, you know, a pitcher who was just throwing kind of a side session, and the catcher was like, hey, what pitch was that? And he goes, oh, it's a changeup. I throw sometimes, whatever. He's like, why don't you throw it more? And he's like, oh, I don't know. So he's like, well, we're going to start doing that more. We're going to throw this more. And he's having I can't remember who it was. But
I don't know. That's how Rivera's cutter came about. He was just throwing it in warm-ups.
So
why is that ball game, move so know, much? Well, I throw it like this. We'll throw that more.
Yeah, and
point a million being, you know, saves can, later.
Yeah, exactly. Hall of Fame career later.
Right.
But you can, you know, there are small adjustments that you can make in baseball that have a greater impact than some of those things in other sports. So someone like Naftali Feliz, you know, he was like, hey, if he wasn't doing it for the Brewers and Dave Island saw something and they said, hey, why don't you just, you know, slightly move your release point or maybe change your grip just a little bit or throw this pitch instead of that pitch, whatever. Maybe all of a sudden things clicked for him and, you know, you get on and it's definitely not unprecedented at all for relievers to go to a different team and just kind of click and, you know, have a good run, even starters. You know, we saw it with in 2012 with Jeremy Guthrie coming in after the trade for Jonathan Sanchez and had maybe the best stretch of his career for about 2 or 3 months. So, you know, these are definitely things that can happen. And if the Royals can get just a couple good months from Naftali Feliz, then boom, that's absolutely a good signing on their part. And it kind of bolsters a bullpen that, you know, they've had a little bit of struggles lately, but you don't want to talk Kelvin Herrera for a second. You know, he's had some struggles and he still has, you know, that kind of scary ERA of 4.64, which is not something you want for a closer. But you look recently and on June 8th, he gave up 4 earned runs in 0.1 innings.
He got one
very, very
out.
Bad inning, yes, yeah. Against Houston. And since then, he's pitched 8.2 innings. He's only given up 2 runs. And 7 of those 8 innings were scored. He gave both those runs a couple days ago against Minnesota in a game they lost. They were losing anyway.
Yeah, and he hadn't pitched in a week.
He hadn't pitched in a week, so yeah. He was just getting some time. He came right back out the next day. And pitched the scoreless one inning. So 8.2 innings for him over the last 3 weeks, and he only given up the 2 runs. He's starting to pitch a little bit better, starting to be that Kelvin Herrera that we recognize. His fastball looks a little bit faster than what we saw in the early going of the season, and he seems to kind of have toned things down in terms of pitch variety and such that has kind of helped him out a little bit. And if that's what he needs to kind of continue to focus a little bit more, then absolutely, you know, make that happen. But he's, let's see, in that stretch, he's had 5 saves in that stretch. Plus on his most recent outing where he closed out a game that they were up by 4 runs. So it didn't qualify as a save, but it essentially was. So, you know, he's getting better as well. So if, you know, Naftali Feliz comes around and, you know, Kelvin Herrera continues this recent stretch and it kind of rights the ship for him.
It would be F-S-H, they'd be fish.
yeah. Talking about initials for...
Yeah. Instead of H-D-H, it'd be
yep. Fish. And then if you bring in, let's see.
It's a fish with no eyes.
Fish with no eyes. And then Joaquim Soria, who's himself is having a pretty solid season.
A nice comeback after last year.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, which, you know, to our credit, I guess, if we'll toot our own horns for a second, you know, we kind of anticipated he would. You know, it's not – he's not best reliever in the league by any stretch, but – he's certainly having a pretty solid season. You know, a reliever with a 3.34 ERA, you're not going to complain all that much about. You know, you'd like for some of his numbers to be a little bit lower, but overall, he's doing pretty well, including a career high strikeout per 9. Wow, I didn't even realize that until just now. I looked at it. 12.1 strikeout per 9 inning. That's
all right.
That's pretty good. For him, career 9.7 for him. So
for a guy who didn't throw much faster than like 94, he has kind of touched like almost 95 a couple of times. So I don't know what that's about, but yeah, I think he threw like a 95 past Sano or something in that Twin series. Like, okay, get on with it. That's cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you know, if Feliz can kind of return to his, you know, I struggle with what to call the, I guess we're in like the teens, like the early 2010s, I guess. I don't know what, like
yeah.
his 20, 2010 to 2013-ish form for Feliz, and then Soria maintains and Herrera continues to right the ship and gets to be more consistent. I mean, you know, if they've got three solid guys in the bullpen, and you know, we talked last week about Peter Moylan, how he has had his issues, but it's sporadic. It's just mm-hmm. when it occurs, it's really, really bad.
Right.
But when he's good, he's also been really, really good. So, you know, if he can just kind of limit those really, really bad to just kind of bad, then again, you know, that bullpen can quickly become a strength for this team, along with, you know, the Mike Miners of the world who's having a great season. And, you know, it's, again, just more fuel for this bus that's chugging along towards, as Ned Yost to say, going all in for this season. Man, I'm pumped. I think it's fun, man. I've been having a lot of fun these last couple of weeks with this Royals team. They look like they're having fun, and that's, I think, one of the things that was missing a lot from last season too. The team itself didn't look like it was having. I don't know if it was 2 years of long playoff runs that just caught up to them. They didn't seem like they were having as much fun out there. This year, it seems like that's back. The energy, the fun, it seems like it's back. It's really fun to watch right now. It's fantastic Royals baseball, and it's awesome to be a Royals fan right at this moment.
Yeah, there was Mike Farron on MLB Radio, MLB Network Radio, was kind of talking about this, and he's like, well, I mean, at this point, why would the Royals be selling? You know, why would they get to this stage and start thinking about selling anything? At this point, you've got this group. They're together. They're friends. They played forever together. Just and the line that he ended up saying, you know, that I love is, screw it, go for it. It's like, exactly. Like, just you know, go for it. Someone else later talked about it like, this is the senior season. It's like, okay, you can look and you can kind of tell that, okay, this group recognizes that this is the last year that it's going to be like this. So they got past that April. They started playing better. Now they're playing and having fun doing it. And, you know, it's like just like they got nothing to lose. They're just going to play and go for it. And if that's what it means, you know, if that's what they have to be doing, you know, we've seen it before. They get a chip on their shoulder. They get some kind of motivation to steer everybody in the right direction and in the same direction. I mean, it gets to be really fun. And it's fun for them, and it's fun as fans. And I think you see a lot more people buying it right now, even though I think they had about the same record this time last year, too.
Side note, I forgot to point out, when I was looking up Balboni's stats, the 85 Royals after 83 games were 42-41.
Okay.
Just throwing it out there.
There you go. So, I mean, at this stage, just mathematically, they're in a playoff spot right now. You know, so everybody else, except the Twins, and, well, the teams ahead of them, of course, but everybody else has to catch them. And there's no team out there that isn't flawed in some way. You know, Seattle can score 8 runs or 2 runs. That's about all they do. 8 runs or 2 runs. That's about it. You know, Tampa is, no one expected them to be here. The Twins, no one expected them to be around here. The Tigers are old and tired, and they're, you know, ready to start moving guys. The White Sox aren't any good. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to think that, okay, the Royals just have to kind of maintain, and they can do this. And once you get in there, that's all you need. You just get in, just get into the playoffs, and anything can happen. We saw that in 2014 where, shoot, they were, you know, like 9 outs away, come back, rattle it off, you know, rattle off 7 more wins, go to a World Series, and come within, you know, a couple of plays from maybe winning that series. So that's all it takes. Just get in. And at this stage, you know, I'm expecting, because everybody always counts the Royals out, and this is me as a fan speaking. This isn't rational, but it does get annoying when there's all these reasons why, oh, the Royals, even though they're 43-40 and they're actually in the playoff spot now, here's why they can't, and here's why a team like Baltimore, who's 40-43 and went a whole month giving up five or more runs every game. This is why they can make it. And it's like, come on. You know, it's like in April there were all the columns about, well, the Royals need to start selling parts now. And it was like, and here's how the Giants, who had the same record, basically, here's how the Giants are going to make their comeback. And it's just like, no, I'm going to buy into this. It's, you know, there's no reason not to. The Royals at this stage are not going to sell off guys unless they lose like 18 games in a row. And even then, I don't think they're going to trade off any of the guys like Moose or Hosmer or Vargas. You know, it's just not, or Kane. You know, they're going to finish the year with most of these guys. I would be pretty sure, even if they do miss the playoffs. You know, and if they do miss, okay. But I think they're going to give them every chance to make one more shot at it and see what happens. And, you know, when they do that, you know, the Royals seem to have a way to make it work. You know, and another thing, this is the last thing I'll kind of say about these guys. I think in their last 22 games, they've won 16. So they've done 16 out of 22, which is right in line with that 15 to 20, mm-hmm. which is just a legendary comment from Dayton Moore in 2014 now. So there's no reason why the Royals can't continue to do it. You know, they're hitting well. They're playing good defense. They're getting good starting pitching. Danny Duffy is back. The bullpen top to bottom is more sound than it was in April and through most of May. They get a shot. They're going to go for it. And I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah. And again, you look at it and, okay, if you're not a Jason Vargas believer, then okay, I'm not going to fault you there. But outside of that, you know, you look at what this team is doing, and you say to yourself, what exactly isn't sustainable? And I don't know that you can find much that you can really argue with. You can nitpick some things, okay. Even if you want to try and say, okay, Eric Hosmer is not the hitter that he has been the last month or so, you know, it's not like he's been on a tear where he's hit like, you know, 12 home runs in a month or something. You know, he hasn't hit a ton of home runs even this year. He doesn't have 12 on the year, but he's just hitting well, hitting timely. And that's what we thought he would be as a hitter. He's got 11 home runs, but he is on pace to have, you know, probably close to 20 home runs and maybe his best season of the year, considering how it started, which is quite impressive. So, and you know, you can nitpick some things, but ultimately I think so much of it is pretty sustainable. And, you know, exactly. I love the senior year analogy type of thing. You know, we're all in this, you know, we're getting after it. This crew has done amazing things, and we're just going to go for it, because why the hell not? You know, why would you
– yeah.
If you're in this position where you've got a team that's won a World Series, players that are used to playing together, love playing together, have won a World Series together, the majority of them anyway, I mean, if that's where you're at, why in the world would you do anything different? Why would you not just try and go for it? And that's what they're trying to do, and I'm loving it. I'm in. If I don't, you know, and if you're, we kind of talked about this in the BP Kansas City Slack chat. You know, if you are the Royals right now and you're worried about, if you think best case scenario, right? Even if, let's just say they ended the playoffs. Let's say they, not even talking wild card, say they go to the playoffs and they lose ALDS, ALCS, whatever it is. Let's say that happens, and you can say, if you're Dayton Moore, okay, in the last 5 years, the Royals had five straight – God, I hate that they were 500 last year – non-losing seasons.
Right.
And four winning records, three playoff appearances, two pennants, one World Series, and then, you know, a possible absolute best-case scenario of another pennant or World Series, you know, if they were to get that far, because like you said, anything can happen in the playoffs. So if you're the Royals and you can say that, and then you can keep saying that for the next 5 years when your team is terrible and you don't have anything in the farm system
right.
that you can develop and come up right away, I'm okay with that as a fan. you know, and maybe after 3 years of losing 90-plus games, maybe I'll think differently. But I can always wrap myself in my 2015 World Champion t-shirt and put on my World Series hat and remember that it was all worth it. So, and I got to think if you're the front office of the Royals that you're feeling exactly the same way right now about how this goes. Like, we have a chance to really do something special, to really, you know, give the fans and this team another something amazing. So that's what we're going to do. And absolutely, you know, I'm all in. I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to make this thing happen.
Let's do it. Yeah, I mean, 2018 is going to be a little rough. No doubt
Absolutely.
About that. 2019 probably going to be a little bit rough. 2020 maybe still rough. Who knows? You know, but what I know right now is the Royals are 3 games above 500. They're playing very well. They just had the best June of pretty much anybody. They just got their best pitcher back and probably one of their best leaders back, you know, onto the field, at least. I mean, he's always been around them, but he's back on the field now. Like you said, the lineup, you know, it's been pretty deep. Gordon and Escobar have been hitting better. Soler's come back. He's looked okay. He's had, you know, his issues, and Brandon Moss has had his struggles, but they both kind of done some stuff. But it feels more balanced. And at this stage, you've got a really bad month of April, a really great month of June, and a good month in May. And, you know, I think the transition going from May into June is probably closer, because I'm thinking there's 2 months where they've been pretty good or very good, and there's 1 month where they've been bad. There's 1 month where Hosmer's been awful and 2 months where he's been really good. And then you just look at the combination of everybody's month. Moustakas has been good. Perez has been good. You know, all of these guys, you know, who are, you know, Kane, Perez, Hosmer, Moustakas, Merrifield. Those are 5 guys who have played pretty well for most of the season. And at least right now, their performance has them at a line that looks like they've been good all year. So then it's whatever you get from Bonifacio, who, you know, if he adjusts again to the league and starts to hit a little bit better and more consistently, that's great. Escobar has been better. Alex Gordon has been more productive, even if the average isn't jumping up as quickly as we would like to see it. And even Moss has been okay in a couple of games here. So, yeah, it all rounds up to where, you know, the lineup hasn't been perfect all year, but it's better now, and the team overall is playing very well. And, you know, at this stage, there's no reason why the Royals would be out of it, even if something like their talent level might not be what you would expect to be on a playoff team. You know, they're not the Orioles, who everybody seems to buy into, or the Mariners, who are always going to make the playoffs this year, and they never do. So,
right. Perpetually always going to make the
playoffs. They're always that team, and they always finish around 500. It's just what they do. So, yeah, there's no reason right now that the Royals are destined to fall back. And so, you know, it's just going to be fun. I mean, they're going to finish off this first half. Hopefully, this is what you should look for. If they happen to do something against the Dodgers and play really well against them, just shove all the chips in the middle.
If they win 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers and they're 45-41 going in, and then, you know, maybe there's a possibility. I don't know if they go 2-1. Against the Dodgers, that they could still do it. But, well, they've still got tonight's game. So, like, if they win tonight and go 2-1, they'd be 46-41. But I don't know if they could, if going 3-1 of the final four could possibly put them in first place. I know there's a scenario that plays out where the Royals could be in first place at the break. But, I mean, either way, like you said, if they win 2 out of 3, or even, you know, if they win 1 out of 3, and because it is in LA, but if they win 1 out of 3 and then they're competitive in the other 2 games against what's easily the best team in baseball, I mean, you got to feel pretty good about where you are, and especially if you win, you know, 2 out of 3 or something. So I'm this it's not a a make or break series by any means, like this, like I was thinking the Twins one was this past weekend, but I'm definitely going to be paying attention. It's going to be a fun series. I wish it was in Kansas City, but unfortunately it's not. So
alas.
Yes, but and what a better way to go into the break than if you were to take two out of three from the best team in baseball, and possibly even, you know, if you win that last game of the series against Clayton Kershaw with Danny Duffy going toe-to-toe. I mean, God, that would just be – it'd be awesome, wouldn't it? But, you know, the odds of that are slim, but we will certainly see. And it's going to be fun. You know, it's – this we keep early on when things were going poorly, we kept saying, you know, I hope it hope things start to be more fun, and they have slowly gotten to the point where they absolutely are more fun, and it's great now, and hoping it continues, and the Royals can really make a run at this thing, you know, one last hurrah, if you will. I'm ready.
Yep.
I'm ready to make it happen.
Bring
so
it on.
With that, I think we'll leave you. It'll be the next time we chat, it'll be the All-Star break, and the Royals will have all the questions that we've just proposed will be answered. And it'll be exciting stuff because the Royals could be in really good shape and possibly in first place if all things went absolutely best case scenario, which would be pretty damn amazing considering where the Royals were just 6 weeks ago. So until then, be sure to visit our sponsors, of course, Kelly's Westport Inn, as always, if you want to have some drinks, have a good time. And the bpkansascity.com, great content there as the Royals continue to heat up. There's tons of great analysis about what they're doing right, what they still could be doing better, you know, all these types of things. And all the fantastic writers that we have at BP Kansas City are covering all of it 100%. So for all your best information there, absolutely go to BP Kansas City. You're going to get the best analysis. You can get this side of the interwebs, I'll say. I'm saying it. I'm throwing it out there. Visit them until we visit with you again next week when we'll be into the All-Star break and that we've passed that point in games, the true mid-season for MLB. So I will see you next week. Be sure to visit our sponsors. Thank you all so much for listening. We absolutely love all of you. It's you guys are fantastic. And stick with us. It's going to be a fun ride the rest of the way. We absolutely love sharing it with all you guys. So interact on Twitter, Facebook, the whole deal. We absolutely, you know, it's going to be a fun rest of the season. Yep. So we're looking forward to it. We'll see you next week. Until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
And vote Moose.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816. Limitosis. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.